We'll begin on Daf Chof Hei Amud Aleph. We ended last time with the statement that for Kriya Shema, it's enough to have your nakedness covered. Again, we said that that's really only Bish'as Adchak, right? But for Kriya Shema, meaning for everything other than Shemoneh Esrei, it's enough to have your nakedness covered, at least Bish'as Adchak. But for Tefillah, the Gemara said, it's a top line of the Chofeim with Aleph. You have to have your heart covered. Which means that there has to be something above the waist also. So this is where we ended off last time. And I just wanted to put this into perspective of halacha. So first of all, we already explained. What's the difference between Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei? The big difference is, the fundamental difference is that in Shemoneh Esrei is when you're actually standing kiviyachol face to face with Hashem. And therefore, it's not just an issue of treating what you're saying respectfully, but you have to be making yourself presentable to stand before a king. And therefore, certainly to just have pants on and nothing above certainly won't suffice. But now let's ask, so what is it? What did it say? Achei chases liboy. You have to cover your heart. What does that mean in halacha lemaisa? So the Bach says lemaisa, the Mishnah brings it down. Really, what it means is the upper torso has to be covered as well. That's really what it means. The whole body has to be covered. You have to be covered normal way, as when you would. The general definition the place can give it is the way you would present yourself at an important meeting. You're coming to meet Gedolim, not as in what we call today Gedolim, great Rabbanim, but Gedolim means important people. You have an audience with somebody important, be it a job application or whatever it is. You're coming to meet somebody important. How would you dress? You're dressing your finery, meaning you're not necessarily dressed in the yomtiv clothing. You don't have to wear a tuxedo when you daven, but you do have to dress in the way you would dress when you're going to meet somebody important. You have to dress respectively. So, I wanted to just quickly actually go through the Shulchan Aruch here, just to get a little bit more of an idea of what's actually expected and required when you're going to, how you present yourself when you're davening. So first of all, yes, basically as we just saw here in the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch says, Hoizotalis chagura mosnov v'chasoysa mimosnov v'lamato. If you have something you're wearing from your waist down, also this follow, you're not allowed to daven until you have something covering your heart. And the Mishnah Berurah comments, "Hoadim kol gufa." It really means that the body has to be covered. Now, the imloy kisa is liboy. If a person did not cover his heart, meaning his upper torso was exposed, or if he simply has nothing to put on, since as long as lamaisa, your nakedness is covered, you're yotze b'di'eved. But again, this is not allowed. Just that if you did, you're yotze b'di'eved. Now,
is it not true that by a man is only like the bottom part is problematic?
Not for Shemoneh Esrei. For Shemoneh Esrei, it's an issue of presenting yourself before Hashem presentably. And you have to, therefore, yes, here the gauge is that you have to present yourself the way you would present yourself for someone you needed to make an important impression on.
Why
did the Gemara say Levi? Right. Why did the Gemara say Levi? So it's interesting. Rabbeinu Yonah says, and this is also something interesting to note, he says the reason that the Gemara said Levi is because the heart is the most important of our limbs that we're going to be covering. And therefore, that's what the Gemara was stressing. Even the heart, which is the most chashiva of our organs, is to be covered. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah puts it. Now,
what's more important? If you happen to have lost track of time, you're at a beach or a pool, and all of a sudden you realize I didn't daven mincha.
So you would daven. It's, you know, it's going to be considered a compromised tefillah, but you do daven.
Maybe you're asking, is it better to
lay
tefillah to
no, so that he says, then it says, if a person doesn't have what to wear, so he davens like this. But it's very bidiyah. It's very bidiyah. Then we have the next halacha, which is the interesting discussion of gartel. Tzomich lezer ezer bishas tefillah. You have to wear a belt when you daven. Hafilu yesh loy avnet shein libay roya sa'erva. And even if you already have some sort, something girding you, which everybody today, if you're wearing underpants, you already have that, or pants, or whatever it is, you have something around your waist. It's not like in earlier times where they wore robes, so there was mamish nothing around the waist.
Where are we now?
What's that? No, I'm just reading from the Shulchan Aruch. I want to just go briefly through the Shulchan Aruch. Because that's called properly preparing yourself. Now, Lamaisa, yeah, this is the basis of the minig that of wearing a gartel during davening. However, we may allow ourselves to say that that's a minig which is commendable and pious, but it's not required based on this halacha, because really what this halacha means is that a person who usually wears a belt, this is how the Achoinim put it into perspective, a person who usually wears a belt and it's a part of his attire should not daven without a belt. It doesn't mean that there's a chiyuv to wear a special belt for davening. Therefore, we might say, if you normally wear a belt on your pants, you should wear a belt on your pants when you daven as well. Don't daven without the belt, because that's called not completely dressed properly.
Wear suspenders, you should wear a gartel.
What's that?
If you're wearing suspenders instead of a belt, you should wear a gartel, right?
There would be an advantage to doing so. Again, we would still say that it's not required essentially, because the way the Achoinim put this is that it means that a person who normally wears a belt must wear a belt during davening. But we'll call it an advantage.
How is that hikayin?
Not necessarily. Hikayin here might mean make yourself presentable. Now there are those that, yeah, there's two levels of hikayin. There's a level of hikayin of make yourself presentable. For example, clear out your body of filth, right? Go to the bathroom before davening. Make sure you're not coming to daven when you're full of filth. That's also called hikayin. Just properly. There's another level, and that's what the Gemara Taka says. We'll see. But it says that, yes, there were Chachamim who would make a point of wearing something special for davening. This is where the issue of, you know, you might want to wear a jacket, a hat, whatever it is that you, to make yourself look, to put something on the Chavay davening. That's an added level. It says that they would do it with Amirayim, who used to wear that special things that they wore for davening. Now,
you're saying there's no gauge here, it's a personal gauge, what you would wear before it came? And one mentioned Ben Gurion, who wasn't dressed properly in England.
I was actually going to get to that. Okay, well, we'll get to that. Now, Aval Shav Roch Hasmut Levorich Beloi Chagura, but the other brachas you can make without a belt, as long as you're wearing pants, meaning as long as l'maisi your heart is separated from your nakedness, that's good enough. But again, for davening, there's that extra level. You want to make yourself as presentable and as fully dressed as you possibly can. Meaning here we see it's nothing to do with being uncovered. The belt is not what makes or breaks you being uncovered. It's not like the shirt, right? You're fully covered. The belt is not going to add any covering. It's just an issue of that fully dressed, right? You wouldn't go to, like we said, you wouldn't go to an important meeting that way. If you normally wear a belt, if it's the type of pants that would normally wear a belt, you put a belt on.
Go back to the suspenders question. Some people wear a belt for the way it looks. But what if someone only wears it to hold up his pants? And then he's wearing suspenders at different times. I mean, there was no idea of the belt for the way it looks. Would we still say, according to the Quran, that person is still better to wear a belt? Or would we say in that person's case, no, and there was no consequence?
I don't know. I hear the question. We know that, you know, what I wanted to really start doing was to mark things down as people ask them, because good questions come up. You have a little piece of paper? We'll just make a quickly jot down. I got it. Go ahead. Hold on.
Okay. Go ahead.
There we go. Thank you. Okay. Now let's move on to the Shulchan Aruch a little bit more. Okay, so here this is also an issue of presentability. The famous halacha, we'll move through it. There are those that say that you're not allowed to say Hashem's name with an uncovered head. This is not a chiddush today. The wearing yarmulke has become mamish standard practice, so there isn't really much to discuss here. Although we will note that there were communities where upstanding, pious Jews didn't wear yarmulkes in their daily dealings. They wore them in shul. They wore them at davening. So, because essentially it's a minig. And where the minig took hold to wear it all the time, you're required to wear it at all times. But there were Sfadi communities, there were also even in the Yekesha community, the German communities, where they didn't necessarily wear a yarmulke all day. But to say Divrei Kedusha, you must be wearing something on your head.
With the Iver of Pidon.
What's that?
Is it certainly the deep
Halacha?
No, there was a person was in a situation these camps, they didn't have the
okay, I don't know. Have someone else cover your head. We'll see in a minute. Have someone else cover your head.
Well, if you put your hand over your head.
Oh, that's not good enough. We'll see now coming up. That's coming up. Some say also that not just when you're actually saying things, but you should protest against people not walking into a shul with their head uncovered. Meaning, even in the situations where one might not wear a head covering, the place can deal with this. The place can say that, practically speaking, the general rule is that people have to be wearing a head covering at all times. But the point here is that in a shul you don't step in even, let's say, less than 4 amos without a head covering. Now, and now we get into the point of the hand. What's with the hand?
How are you supposed to cover, by the way?
What's that?
How are you supposed to cover?
That's Reb Moshe has a tshuva. There was a Reb Shlomo Kluger said that most of the head has to be covered. But Reb Moshe has a tshuva saying that that's not so. So I don't know. But Reb Moshe Lemaisa says that that's not so. What's that?
What is it? So
Reb Moshe says that it's not. Reb Moshe says that there isn't really a shiur.
There's
not really a shiur. There's no specific amount that has to be covered. You have to have a head covering in that soul. No specific amount that has to be covered. What's that?
It's a nano part. You know okay. It's there, but nobody else does.
All right. we speak practically. Okay.
There's a shear. It could be very small.
Marisani question sometimes.
Right. Okay.
Does a Gaisha politician have to wear one because they're Jewish?
What's that?
Does a Gaisha politician have to wear one?
As long as it's made out of cardboard. Yeah. So now he continues and he says, apparently there was some sort of rudimentary head covering that they had then. Not so relevant for us, but here's the point. Putting your hand on your head is not considered a head covering. Meaning, to go like this and make a bracha won't do. Now, we'll just note that for this is an important point. For the issue of that we say that Lamaisa today we're forbidden from walking around without a head covering, putting your hand on your head will do. If you want to get out of bed and walk somewhere, whatever it is, you're not a yarmulke, for that, putting your hand on your head will do. But for saying Divrei Kedusha, it won't do. For saying Divrei Kedusha, it won't do.
If a person's not allowed to walk 4 amos without their head covered, why would some of these more biased Sephardi communities, like the Syrians or the Yekas, why were they doing that then?
No, so again, this is where that was the long-standing minig. In addition to the fact that circumstances then made it necessary for them to do so. In fact, from what I've heard in the Sephardi communities, it was davka, a measure of piety, because the goyim all went davka with head coverings, and therefore the Jews made a point of not going with head coverings, which is actually a pious practice, to distinguish ourselves from the way we look from the goyim. Just why, at the end of the day, during tefillah, it's mamash shechiyu, so then they covered their heads.
Let's say the big rabbi of the community, when did that? My understanding is that the rebbeim of that community, the poskim would have worn kippahs, and maybe they looked at it as more guided for them to wear kippahs because that's what the gedolim do.
I don't know. Now, but if someone else covers your head, mashma dechshiva kisui. That does seem to be a proper head covering. So again,
you say you could use your own hand for davening because that's the wisdom minhag. My hand can't ever do it as a thinker or a din, and that's why it's not good enough.
I don't know if that's the reason. The reason is because it's connected to that. What the person can say is that if it's all the same entity, it's not called. It's not. You can't cover yourself with yourself. But that depends. When it comes to Dalai Lama, it's an issue of respect. Yeah, it's more of a practical thing. It's not such an essential issue. Not an essential issue that there's really a din to have a covering. It's an issue of it's disrespectful to walk around with a bare head. You have a hand on your head, it's not a bare head. Not a bare head. But where there's an essential requirement to actually have a covering, you can't cover your body with your body. That's what we say. So therefore, for Divrei Kedusha, no. You have someone else put a hand on your head, but not your own hand. That's right. If you pull your sleeve over your head, that definitely is okay. That definitely is okay because that's a separate covering. That's not your body covering your body.
There's also a difference between indoors and outdoors, right? Under the sky.
The place can suggest such a thing. It's more common, but it's not accepted. That differentiation is not lamaisa accepted la halacha. You know, lamaisa we pass because you have to always cover your head, even indoors.
No, but outside is more common for whatever it's worth.
I don't know what the implications would be. I don't know.
Whatever the materials that is covering could be made.
No, anything, as long as it's covered. It should be covered.
I mean, if you shine a flashlight, that's also a light covering.
You cover it with air too, with wind. No, we're talking about. Come on, think practically. Come on, don't look for.
If it's playing more in the gym, playing more outdoors.
What's that?
If it's playing more in the gym, playing outdoors.
If there's a head, you're saying if there's a head to take yarmulke for playing. I don't know. I hear. Now this is interesting, huh?
Why should you?
No, when you're playing, when you're playing ball.
In the gym. How much you have to be mindful to the outdoors, it was still more.
Going to first base and it fell. Did they say, yeah, they invented cruising?
Don't know what to say. He does, he brings on such a svara, but lemaisa, we don't go with that, lemaisa. I don't know.
Nowadays in Europe, it's dangerous.
Oh, so truth is something that the place can take into consideration. When necessary, there will be, you know, it's possible to do away with that element of it. But as far as we're saying the Divrei Kedusha, that's a more full-fledged obligation. Next, lo yamoid ba'afundosai. This is also important, even though we don't do this per se, but a person shouldn't stand with his money pouch. He used to wear a belt pouch. A person shouldn't daven with that, because once again, you daven in a settled way. Yeah, you daven in a settled way. You don't daven when you look like you're on the guard. The same way you wouldn't daven with a baseball glove on. We'll see soon. The truth is that you shouldn't daven bechlal with gloves on, because that also kind of looks like you're davening on the go. Unless it's a gloves. If a person is mamish cold during davening, you can wear gloves. But the person
you
say, what's that? Yeah,
so
it's cold.
Winter,
right. If it's cold and you're wearing
like
that reason.
Like that.
Well, like a knapsack?
No, something goes around your waist and, you know, clips, and then you forget about it.
Oh, so it seems that it's better not to. Better not to. I mean, you daven in a settled way. You don't daven when you look like you're davening in between activities or on the go or on your way somewhere. You come into shul, you're wearing a windbreaker, maybe take it off. Again, these are things, it's hard to give exact definitions of what yes and what not. But the general idea is that you don't daven while you look like you're on the go, while you look like you're in the middle of in between activities. You came to shul to daven. That's what you came to shul for. So really this is kind of like a paradigm. Not to daven with your money pouch.
Right.
Then yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's say you were davening with more peace of mind.
Right.
That's
right. Right. Look
enough.
And it's okay. Yeah. Yeah. These are all issues of practicality.
But if you're
Your wife, you're not alone.
Depends on the inyan.
But if you're at a table like this, you can put it on the table in front of you, so.
Right, it's physical.
You can see it, but you're just not wearing it.
Not wearing it, right, right, right. What's that? Can't put your hand in your pocket?
Even more, so wearing gloves.
It could be that wearing gloves would be preferable to putting your hand in your pocket. Maybe once you're cold and you're wearing it because you're cold, that's okay.
You shouldn't put your hands in your pocket, that's true?
Yeah. Then it says, okay, v'lo b'rosh megula v'lo b'raglayim megula. He says also, do not daven with your head exposed or with your feet exposed. So here also the head exposed, we already discussed that a person shouldn't be wearing, going around uncovered. But here, the place can say that the point here is a hat. A person should be wearing a hat when he davens. Now here also, the point here is, today, can we say that it's a chiyuv to wear a hat? In earlier times it was. But today, we can't necessarily say that it's a chiyuv to wear a hat, because the point here is, once again, how would you present yourself at an important meeting? Use that as the gauge. So in earlier times, when you took off your hat, when you were getting comfortable, it was kind of like the expression of letting your hair down, so you don't take off your hat during davening. It really depends on the situation. A person is from a society or from a... That's what the person can say, for example. People who do wear hats should not daven without a hat. But a person, if in today's reality people don't wear hats, we can't say that it's a chiyuv. It's not a chiyuv. Now, the same applies also. A person should not daven with bare feet. What's that? Right, Kohanim is a different story. That is a din, that the feet should be, there shouldn't be a chitzit between their feet and the floor. But generally speaking, when a person presented himself, again, in a general way, when a person presented himself before the king,
Yeah.
So a person, right, pajamas also is not. A person should not daven with pajamas.
Is it saying a bracha?
No, we're talking about Shemoneh Esrei here.
Well, you might want to put on a robe if possible.
But again, the idea would be that the person can actually talk about that. A person is in the hospital, he's in pajamas. So basically they say the same thing. If you were getting an important visitor, how would you present yourself? So often the answer will be just as is. Sometimes the answer will be, well, I'd make the effort to put my robe on. Right? Whatever the situation is, that's always the gauge. In your current situation, how would you present yourself before an important person?
Assuming
shoes is in the place, and supposedly the shoes just point out the
contradiction.
That's what Joe just said. So also, the Kohanim serve without shoes. Right. But nevertheless, again, when we're talking about a place that it's also to wear shoes, it's also to wear shoes, fine. But otherwise, when it's just an issue of how do you present yourself, that goes by the reality of what's considered respectable and what isn't. Okay. So again, the point is to take these things into account. When you're davening, don't daven. People come in off the street with shorts or whatever it is. Present yourself respectably. It also says people, if the person is wears work clothes, right? Person has a, whether it's a work uniform that's not so respectable, like let's say for example, what doctors wear in the hospital is not something you would feel comfortable walking around in the street. Right? They wear basically it looks like pajamas. Gross. Right, it looks like pajamas. Right? They wear the blue pajamas or whatever it is. Not something that you would necessarily feel comfortable walking around in the street in. So again, might be lichatchila not to daven wearing those clothing. Or, right, work clothes. The person is wearing work clothes that are especially soiled, etc. It's an issue of sensitivity. The way you would present yourself when you're standing to daven, That's the term we keep using. You're standing to meet an important, distinguished individual. That's how you should present yourself to them. Okay.
Any justification for those that wear sandals and shorts and t-shirts?
Well, the argument would be that that's how people go around today. But the truth is, we have to ask.
Would it's very appropriate.
Oh, it's appropriate. So the question is, you have to ask ourselves as follows. So first of all, we ask a basic question. Would they go to their brother's bar mitzvah that way? By some people, the answer is yes. By some people, the answer is yes. But at the end of the day, we still have to put, we have to get a certain perspective on this, and that is the following. Sometimes terms of respectable, concepts of respectable change with time. But sometimes there's a culture, which was very much the early kibbutz culture, of forget respectable. Casual became the way to go. It almost became like an ideology, right? Working people, casual, etc., which very much came at the expense of the whole concept of reverence. That's like what Nachamya mentioned before. Ben Gurion used to come to the Knesset without a tie. Right? Today, forget about it. I don't know if anybody in the Knesset knows what a tie is. But, maybe two or three. But he said, one time someone commented to him, he said, no, Churchill told me that I can that it's appropriate for me to go to the Knesset without a tie. Everyone was surprised. Churchill, of all people, told him that. So he said, yeah, I came to 10 Downing Street and I came in without a tie. So Churchill told me, where's your tie? So I said, well, even the Knesset, I don't wear a tie. So Churchill said, when you're in the Knesset, don't wear a tie. When you come to 10 Downing Street, you wear a tie. So Churchill told me I can skip my tie in the Knesset. But what's the point? It's one thing when the styles change, but when the style becomes lack of reverence and respectability, you're losing a certain dimension of our Avodas Hashem, right? There's no question in the world out there today where it just has become, you know, a person's whole wardrobe is jeans, right? And he doesn't own a different type of pair of pants. It's because of the fact that we'll say it in a very basic way, that we don't live with monarchy anymore. We don't know what real reverence is. We don't have reverence for anything. There's nothing to revere in today's world. Monarchy was a very important thing in Chazal's eyes because it gave us an idea of how to relate to Hashem. And you see today that in democratic society, which has a lot of bracha to it, and monarchy had a lot of problems with it, but one of the negative results is that there's nothing left to reveal. Everything is to revere. Everything's cool. Everything is chilled. Everything is awesome and radical and random. No, that's the latest thing. Radical is really old-fashioned. Random, I think that's the word they say today. And that Mamish says it. It's random, right? You know, whatever it is. Jeans and t-shirts, and that's basically all you have to own. That's really a different story. We're not talking about a mere difference in style, but we're talking about a whole drop in losing the whole dimension of reverence. And that's a comment that we might have. If it turns into a situation where the most respectable dress you'll ever be in is shorts and sandals, there's a certain dimension that's missing. You've lost a certain sensitivity that's really a very important sensitivity in serving Hashem. So that's why at the end of the day, we have to say that, yeah, the kibbutz mentality is certainly compromising in a way an important part of a Jew's relationship with Hashem.
Would they daven in shorts on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur?
I don't know. Well, I suspect that in most kibbutzim they don't daven in Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. They avoid the question by avoiding shul. But Elchanami, when we're not talking about the kibbutz, right? We're talking about the more religious manifestations. You have to beware of that influence. You have to beware of that influence. Not let it creep in. To be able to maintain a certain standard of reverence, holding on to what used to be in the olden times.
And New York.
What's that?
Washington Heights. The big Orthodox shul in New York, the Gaboyim, all wore morning coats, very top hats.
On Shabbos. Yep. The more the better. See, there were my Rabbi Roim who used to mamish had special garments.
Yeah.
They park the cars too.
That's the idea. All right. Okay.
On the road.
They have. They have fun.
Okay, so I think we got across the point here. So we'll move on. Chafei Omer Aleph, the top line. The end of the line. The Omer Rav Huna. Rav Huna said, Shochach v'nichnas v'tfilin lebeis hakisei. If a person forgot and went into the bathroom with tefillin, so you cover it with your hand until you finish.
He's actually wearing them on his head.
He's wearing them on his head. Yeah, he forgot.
I can't fathom.
Well, you have to remember that we're not in today's reality. It wouldn't really manifest, but in earlier times where they wore tefillin all day, you have to remember that in Gemara's terms, some of the people wore tefillin all day.
Okay.
So they might forget. Today you can't really forget. But when people were wearing tefillin all day, this was conceivable. So
they were in such madreya that they forgot that they were wearing tefillin.
They shouldn't. It shouldn't
that's
happen.
That's what I'm saying.
It shouldn't happen. But, you know, if it did. So the Gemara says, Ad sheyigmar salkadaitach, what, you keep it on until you finish? Why don't you stop and go out? And then take it off and then go back in and resume your business. So the Gemara says, "Elo kido amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok." Rather, it's like Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok said, "Ad shigigmar amud rishon." You wait until that first shot comes out. Meaning, if it comes out in a few shots, you wait until the first shot comes out. You don't stop the first shot in the middle. So the Gemara asks, "Why not? Melivsek lahalter? Why not just stop immediately?" The lekel and get up and leave. So the Gemara says no. Mishum de Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because of what Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said. The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said, Amud hachoyzer meviyes haodam lidei hadroiken. If a person is already letting out the excrement and he pulls it back in, it can cause disease. Hadroiken, I think, is identified as jaundice, whatever that is.
Yes.
Stomach problem. And the same goes for urine. If a person stops the stream as it's coming out, maybe it's adam lidei yirokah. That can cause. Oh, that's the jaundice. Oh, okay. So what's the first one? I'm not sure.
Dropsy. Sickness that causes stomach
to swell. Some sort of stomach disease. And the second one is jaundice, which I think is something hepatitis-like. That's why the yerokin is for the term green. So therefore, no, we don't stop what's coming out, we don't stop in the middle. But once that first shot comes out, we stop, go out, take it off, and then come back in. Okay, that, as Reb Denny pointed out, is not going to be all that relevant to us. Okay. Now we move on. And here we're going to discuss, this is a Gemara with, it's going to lay down important halachic principles that by and large might not seem immediately relevant, but hold a lot of practical relevance. Itmar. So now we have the following discussion. Soya al-Bisor. If a person has filth, soya, excrement, on his body, somewhere on his body. Oy yodoy munachas beveis hakise. Or if a person has his hand in the bathroom, you know that you're not allowed to daven or say kriyat shema or any divrei kedusha in the bathroom. What happens if a part of your body is in the bathroom? Just your hand is in the bathroom. Is that a problem? Now, the common denominator between these two questions is, what happens if some other part of your body is in a problematic state? It's either filthy.
In the second question, not.
Second question is simply in the air. But the bathroom is a problematic place for divrei kedusha. So in the first case, you actually have filth on your body. Just it's somewhere down, covered by the clothing on your leg, on the inside of your leg. Okay. Or you have your hands in a bathroom. Is that a problem? Meaning the common denominator is, if some other part of your body, meaning your eyes don't see it, it's covered, right? You don't see it. But if some covered part of your body is in a problematic state or place, is that a problem? So Rav Huna says, Mutar likrois Kriya Shema. It's mutar. Rav Chisda Amar, Asur likrois Kriya Shema. Rav Chisda says it's Asur. Meaning, even if any part of your body is filthy or exposed to filth, it's a problem. Now, what are the reasoning of these two opinions? Amar Rava, Rava says, My Taina de Rava. What's Rav Huna's reasoning? Why does he say it's mutar? Kol Hanishama Ta'aloka. Who is engaged in the davening or the Dibrei Kedusha? It's your neshama. The organs of the neshama are just the mouth, the nose, the parts of you that breathe. And that's all. There's also a thing that you shouldn't be seeing it. But that's all. Other parts of your body are not a part of what's going on. Your legs are not a part of your tefillah. And therefore, it's okay if your legs are filthy. Or even if your arm is filthy. Any covered part of your body. That's Rav Huna. My time is Rav Chisda. What's Rav Chisda's reasoning? Exim, because it says in the pasuk, "Kol atzmoisai toimano Hashem nichom oicho." All of my bones, meaning all of my limbs, every last part of me is declaring Hashem who is like you. So no, the entire body is a part of what's going on, is a part of the tefillah activity, and therefore the whole body has to be clean and in a state for davening. So what's the halacha here? So the truth is that this, once again, it could be quite relevant. A person goes to the bedroom, and depending on how well he wiped himself, this could be relevant. So the truth is we have to realize, this is, we're getting a little specific here, but these are important halachas to know. The Gemara elsewhere says, L'maisa in halacha, this remains a machloikis. This remains a machloikis. The Shulchan Aruch presents not just two, but three opinions on this. We have two opinions in the Gemara. The Shulchan Aruch presents three opinions. We'll explain in a minute. But one thing is clear, this everybody agrees, is that where the filth actually comes from, meaning at the bowels, there it's definitely a problem. Which means that a person has to make sure to wipe himself very well. Because the way it's put down in halacha is, if a person has feces or excrement in his bowels, in a way that if he were to sit exposed it would be visible, but when he stands it's not visible, but when he sits it's visible, it's already usur to daven like that. And therefore a person has to make a point, if a person doesn't wipe himself very well, it could be mamish usur for him to daven in a way that he's not grateful. Therefore the place can actually recommend, if you're wiping yourself before davening, to actually use water. There are some shuls, I think that in Saudi shuls there you see this more, but they actually have a little hose by the toilet for this purpose. A little hose. It's called a what?
Bidet.
Bidet. What's that?
The Arabs are also in
bidet. So, the place can say that it's very hard to make sure that the area is properly cleaned without water. But even if you don't have that bidet, which is, you know, certainly helps. Yeah, you wet the tissues, and you think you can do a much better job. But it's important to realize this, because if a person is not properly clean, this is mamish likuva. Interestingly enough, on other parts of the body, it's less chamur. Meaning, if it's a little further down the leg, it's not as bad. Let's say a little bit dripped down the leg, whatever it is, a little bit further down the leg is not as bad. The Gemara says, since that area is all the more disgusting, you have to make sure that it's as clean as it could be. Now, other areas already subject to machloikas. So Shulchan Aruch cites three opinions. Shulchan Aruch says, first of all, we have the opinion that says that it's usur if it's anywhere on the body. Then we have the opinion that says that it's mutar as long as it's covered by clothing. And then there's the opinion that says, kind of in between, it says that no, even according to the opinion that it's mutar, it's only if it's in a place that lamaisa is naturally covered, like let's say under the armpit or in the folds of the skin. But if it's on a place where it's exposed on the body, even if it's under the clothing, that's no good. But lamaisa, at the end of the day, the Shulchan Aruch says that certainly we should take into account, we should lechatchila follow the opinion that says that no part of the body should have this on it. The entire body should be clean.
no distinctions made between smelling and not smelling?
No, no, in this sentence, I mean filth. Soon we'll see about smell.
You have to clean though, just part of the body is there. What's the difference, let's say, by silka, where we say Russian ruble is what counts? That's the places you observe.
Oh, so here the point is, like you're saying, call that smoysay tamana. When it comes dapka, when it comes to davening, the nail of your pinky is involved. Every part of your body is involved. This is very interesting. Machlokes about the way they're viewing it is like two opposite hashkafos, which are both true. Meaning, on the one hand, Rav Huna is saying, when you're davening, you're connecting to your real self, and it's just like the way it's actually put in the svarim. You rise above your body when you daven. You rise above your body. So it's that the early chassid, the way the Nefesh HaChaim describes the way a person should be preparing himself for davening, is that he mamish loses touch with his senses. He rises above his body to an extent that that's it. He left his body somewhere down there. That's kind of what Rav Huna is expressing by saying, your body you leave behind when you daven. What's your body? Your body is 180 pounds of meat. That's not a part of who you are, and it's not a part of your relationship with Hashem. You leave that down below. Filthy, it's filthy anyways. The whole thing is one big piece of filth. But then Rav Chisda comes around and says, no, but at the end of the day, you're serving Hashem with your body. At the end of the day, your body is the vehicle that Hashem put you in. And therefore, on the contrary, use your body. Use your body in the service of Hashem. Your body should be a part of the tefillah, right? Maybe it's taka interesting that exactly on this machloikis, there's no clear conclusion. Both opinions are presented in halacha. Not only both, he said even a third opinion. Right? Both of these hashkafas are very important hashkafas to have. Okay, we'll move on. If not, we have the following discussion. Reach ra sheyesh lo ikar. If there's a bad smell that's coming from a distinct source, meaning there's a piece of feces emitting an odor, how far do you have to be from it in order to daven? Rav Huna says marchik dalid ames v'kayle. You have to go 4 ames away and there you can daven. Once you're 4 ames away, what's that? It's everything. I mean, it's all the very Kedusha. Kriya Shema. Here, the Gemara talks about Kriya Shema, but it includes everything. Rav Chisda Amar, Rav Chisda says, no. Manchik Dalid Amis Mimokan Sheposa Koreach. You have to distance yourself 4 Amis from where the smell ends. The Kriya Shema. Then you daven Kriya Shema.
Doesn't that depend on if the wind is blowing
or not?
What's that? Wouldn't that depend on if the wind is blowing?
Yeah. Depends on the reality. So, what does Rav Huna mean? Does Rav Huna mean that you can mamish daven, you're 5 amos away and you smell it fully and you daven? No, the person can say, certainly Rav Huna also agrees that you can't daven if you're close enough to smell it. But all he's saying is that you don't have to be 4 amos away from where the smell ends. You have to make sure you're 4 amos away from the feces itself. Once you're 4 amos away from the feces itself, once you can't smell it, you're okay. Rav Chisda says, no. We say that your area has to be clean in order to daven. Clean doesn't just mean that there's no feces there, but clean means that there's no smell there. And therefore, there can't be even a smell within your 4 amos. If within your 4 amos it smells, that's called that your area is not clean. And therefore, you have to be 4 amos away from where the smell ends. Now here the place can say that this is not subject to the individual. Meaning, let's say I have a person who has a weak sense of smell. No, it goes by the average person. If the average person would smell it, it counts, even if this particular person can't smell. Now, Tanya Kava Seder Rav Chisda. We have a brayso supporting Rav Chisda that you have to be 4 amos away from the smell. Lo yikra adam kriyashma. You're not allowed to recite kriyashma. Lo keneged tzoyas adam. Not in the presence of a person's excrement, the loy keneged tzayas klavim, not in the presence of dog excrement, the loy keneged tzayas chazirin, and not in the presence of pig's excrement, the loy keneged tzayas tanigolin, and not in the presence of chicken's excrement, the loy keneged tzayas ashpo shirei chora, nor are you allowed to daven in the presence of a garbage that's emitting a foul odor. Oh, very good. Here we're seeing an added halach that any foul odor that's resulting from decay, the epitome of that is feces. Right? The body actively turned it into the worst type of decay. But any foul odor that results from decay, it's also to daven in its presence. And even if you have a rotten potato that's giving off a bad odor, that for halachic purposes has the din of tzayah, of excrement.
Let's say someone in the shul has bad BO.
Has?
BO, body odor.
Oh, so no, we're talking about, that's what we're saying, bad smells that are not either excrement or decay are not a problem. There's all kinds of bad smells. Some people get, I know a person who gets nauseous from the smell of cheesecake. But such people also, right? But a bad smell, let's say something burnt, okay, a terrible smell. That's not an issue. Gas, right? A strong smell of gas. All these things are not an issue. An issue. The issue is decay per se.
You don't have to wait. Somebody, you know, you're in shul, whatever, you smell something, you just ignore it.
It depends what. If we're talking about things that come out from the
gas.
Oh, that we're going to get to.
But
that's actually a smell of excrement. That's what it is.
Like a belch.
What's that? Also, that's not.
That's decay.
What's that? Is it decay? I don't know if it's decay. Is it decay?
Belch is just swallowed air.
Right, it's swallowed air. You smell the person. What's bad breath? Is bad breath decay? I don't think so.
The belch is bacteria.
I don't think so.
You're digesting the food. It's broken down. It could be a bad.
I don't know. I hear. But this could be relevant. Like, let's say, for example, when you're in front of a garbage truck. Stop. Garbage has a very bad smell. The garbage in your house. What happens if the garbage in your house is giving off a bad smell? Usually the garbage is covered and you don't smell things. Well, let's say it is. It's giving off a very bad smell. And I'll let us say brachos there, because that is decay. That's decay.
Once I was at a shul that was in Mincha, and the driver of the garbage truck came in to dump with us. And he got I couldn't stand. I guess in that case.
What? That's an interesting. I don't know. The smell obviously originates from the decay, but now it might have a din. My guess would be that it has a din of what's coming up soon. It could be that you're talking about if a garbage man comes in and Imamish is carrying the wonderful smell of his profession. It's. I would definitely hear an argument to say that you shouldn't be davening around that. In general, we come back to what we discussed earlier, that a garbage man should take a shower before going to daven mincha. but let's see, it might be connected to the coming Gemara.
Question is, who's going to let him into the house to take a shower?
What's that?
Like,
I can do that in shul anyways. Right? So now, okay. So you're not allowed to daven, say Kriya Shema in the presence of any of these things. Now, an important thing to note is that actually the Braisa here is talking about a case where there is no smell. Okay? Up till now, meaning even if there's no smell. Meaning, let's say you see feces in front of you, and it's not giving off a smell, you don't smell anything. Or any of these other things, decay, different things that naturally have that bad smell, but right now they're not giving off a smell. It's cold or whatever it is, there's no smell. As long as it's in front of you, as long as you see it, you're not allowed to daven. This is an important distinction we're drawing here. We're going to be elaborating on it tomorrow. There's a lot of halachah lemaisa here. But there are two different rules. You're not allowed to daven in its presence, even if there's no smell. Meaning, if you see it, or if it's within your four amos, you're not allowed to daven even if there's no smell. There's a separate halacha that you're not allowed to daven when there's a smell. But let's keep in mind this distinction. It's fundamental. It's going to be very related to the Gemara we'll see tomorrow. And we'll see tomorrow.
If you sprinkled it with something that totally got rid of the smell, it still would be ulcer because presence is there.
Yeah, if it's something physical that you can see, feces, for example, yeah. Here the difference would be.
Doesn't only rendered neutral.
No, so that doesn't matter. As long as it's still there, it's ulcer. But what you're saying will be relevant for gas. That's where it will be relevant.